You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome to Just Women with me, Ivana O'Brien, introducing more interviews recorded remotely by myself and fellow presenter Jackie Mitchell. Jackie spoke to Joanne Mallon, author of new book How to Find Joy in 5 Minutes a Day. I spoke to Anita Wong, a digital visibility strategist. But firstly, here I am chatting to Caroline Osborne, co-founder of a training organisation offering training webinars, programmes and courses on education law. Hi, Caroline. Welcome to the show. Lovely to have you on. Before we start talking about the current amazing work you're doing, can you tell the listeners a little bit about your career background, what you've done before?
So I'm a practicing solicitor and I've been qualified for just over 25 years now. And I started off life working in the city in procurement and contracts and actually wanted to just act for ordinary people. So I retrained and became a solicitor. And I trained in a high street firm and did really ordinary law, you know, ordinary criminal and family work. And for 10 years, spent time as a duty solicitor at the police station and in magistrates' courts and youth courts, and did lots of family work, divorce work. And I was developing a practice in working for families with children in care and the care system. Then I started to have my own children. And actually work got more difficult for me. And I had also developed a huge youth client base. I just attracted young people. I worked for lots and lots of young people and their friends' friends. And what was a common factor in for a lot of my young clients were they were either out of school or had special needs. I would routinely get them assessed for special needs because I recognised a lot of children involved in the criminal justice system had learning difficulties. And I increasingly got questioned by their mums about what I could do to support them with their education and how I could get them back into school. And I just didn't know how. I was a criminal lawyer, largely, didn't really know how to tackle the education system. But that sparked my interest in education law. So after I had my third child, I chose to retrain again and start specialising in education law, which I've been working in for the last 15 years.
Oh, okay. So I know that you mentioned that obviously you get students that would have been excluded and parents were asking you for their support.
Yeah.
So what sort of thing, how were you able to support the students back into school in that relation? Was it like, how did you challenge the schools around that?
So at that time, being a criminal lawyer, I would just refer them on to agencies and other practices to assist them with that. But now, you know, I regularly challenge school decisions to exclude. And actually, when I went back to, I retrained as an education law specialist, I worked in a not-for-profit law centre. And we did lots and lots of work on school exclusions, challenging the decisions. There's a formal legal structure to challenge decisions to exclude children. And we, you know, we did some amazing work. I worked for a law centre called Streetwise, which is sadly no more, and had reported cases on school exclusion. And in particular, had a case that caused the guidance to change to order reinstatement, to order a separate hearing on reinstating pupils. I mean, since then, that was in 2008, since then the law has changed to combat that. And there's often very little that can be done once the child's been permanently excluded to get them back into school. Although the decision is very challengeable, the schools don't have to reinstate if they don't want to, effectively, if they deem it not appropriate.
So obviously you're now focusing on a specific area of law, which is very topical at the moment. So tell us about that.
So in addition to practising as a lawyer, I've always trained. I've always been a trainer. I've trained people in the community and I train other lawyers. And for probably the last 8 years, I've focused on training local authorities and admissions teams and lawyers who manage school admissions and exclusions and all kinds of appeals in education. And what we, me and my training partner have done is developed a company that wants to focus on not just training other lawyers, but training parents to appeal more effectively when it comes to school admissions and other aspects of education. What we're focusing at the moment, because it's live and very topical right now, is our course on how to prepare an effective school admissions appeal. So our company, Eden Essential Training, is a company we've created to really start empowering parents really to do the best they can at presenting an appeal for a place at a school that they've chosen.
So obviously with this new training company that you started off with your colleague, you must have really noticed a gap in the market with this area of need for parents, because obviously so often parents aren't getting places for their children, are they?
Yes. I mean, year on year, I advise many, many families on school admissions, and, you know, they're upset about not getting into their preferred school and you know, occasionally on it into any school at all, especially in certain parts of South London where there's a real squeeze on school places, secondary school places in particular. And quite often they come to me having already prepared their appeal and wanting me to see what else I can do. And the first thing I do is actually re-prepare, resubmit grounds for their appeal, because a lot of parents don't really understand the legal framework for school appeals, and that, you know, that there are things that can be said beyond appealing for a place, you know, and it's a legitimate legal appeal. So yeah, lawyers are expensive. Quite often parents can't really afford beyond more than an advice session with me. So having the ability to train parents and impart that knowledge to empower them to really give their best go at preparing an appeal, you know, was important to me. You know, I've come from a background of being free at source to suddenly only moneyed parents being able to access my services. So yeah. I felt really it was important that everybody had a go, had access to doing the best for their child, really.
So when a school, when you get a decision and the school says, sorry, you haven't been granted a place, do they give a reason as to why that's happened?
Yeah, they should. They should by law. I mean, I often see letters that just say, sorry, you didn't get in. but by law, they have to give a breakdown of reasons as to why, specifically why you didn't get in. You were, you know, people living nearer to you, that there were more children that lived nearer to you, for example, or we had a huge number of siblings and they're higher in the criteria than your child. You should be given a specific reason by law. So, you know, there's your first free bit of training.
Yeah. I suppose from your point of view, if someone approaches you and they say, well, I've been given this reason as to why they haven't got in, what grounds might they have for appeal? Is it usually based on special educational need, on a sibling being in the school, or what, you know, do you sometimes say something like, I'm sorry, but I don't think actually you have grounds for appeal here? How does that work?
I always be very straight with my clients. If I don't see a ground, you know, it will be that session. And before I see a client, I will generally find out what school, what local authority, and what was the basis of their application. And I'll do some research, and I'll be researching on the law around the admissions arrangement and around that decision. And it's really on a case by case basis that you know, things come out at you in terms of the grounds that are in existence. It's often more complicated than just that individual child and those individual circumstances. It turns on all of the facts, on how well the application has been submitted and how dutiful the local authority have been in assessing that application to their own policy.
So we mentioned the fact that it might be they made a decision you're not in because we've got more people in your area or catchment area, all those kind of things. So what are some of the common reasons you've seen that local authorities might have said, no, sorry, you can't have a place? But actually, when you've looked at it, you've thought, no, you've got good grounds for a case here. What might some of those reasons be?
Oh, let's think. I think of the, I've got to be my last three appeals, sort of, the sort of grounds. And it would be they didn't fully appreciate or accept maybe the medical reasons that the family had given. They hadn't taken on board sufficiently the facts. There maybe was a dispute about which address the family legitimately lived at. They've measured distance in a different way to the distance the family had used. So there was an argument around that. These are really common features. Or they had some kind of strange requirement, especially in the religious schools. You know, quite often I see requirements that want certain types of evidence from your vicar, or, you know, your compliance to your religious, you know, commitment, which are often very challengeable, actually.
Quite often I've come across people I know who want to send their child to a Catholic school. They have to have been baptised, that's fine, but they have to prove they've been to church regularly. And if they turn down, the reason they're given is you didn't attend church regularly. Is that grounds for an appeal? Can they say that?
It could be. I mean, look, schools are allowed to have any ground in the law basically says you're allowed to create any reasonable ground. But you, whatever grounds you create, you have to stick to them and you have to apply them consistently. So it would really be about looking at what the grounds have been created and have they gone beyond them in making that particular decision. So it's never as straightforward as saying, yeah, they can do that. Because as well, the grounds can't be discriminatory. They can't be restrictive to, for instance, you can't have a ground in London in particular that says you have to live in a particular borough. That would be unlawful. And you can orchestrate a ground so effectively only children in a particular borough, and this is similar to a case that I dealt with some years ago, the way the ground was written, in essence, if you didn't live in that borough, you wouldn't qualify. It was unlawful.
Wow.
Although it wasn't set out in that way, when you really interpreted it, it was clearly an unlawful ground.
And obviously, so, if you haven't got a background in law and wouldn't know that, how would parents know?
Yeah, you would. And there's so many, you know, what I hope is the training will give you a broader understanding of what can be done and can't be done by schools when assessing applications, and what you can say to counteract poor decision making on your application.
So tell us about the package then. So obviously it's £99 for the training and everything that goes with it. Tell us what's involved, Carolyn.
So the training is a recorded webinar. Myself and my training partner, Dennis Edwards, who's a barrister, and we've worked together for years in education, dealing with really complex admissions appeal cases and all other aspects of education law. And it gives you a sort of a step-by-step outline of the law, the process, and the sort of things that you can challenge, the regulations around admissions appeals. And you know, I hope we've done it in a way that's really accessible to the average parent, you know, the non-legally qualified parent. And alongside it, we've created a template that is a sort of a structure that you can use to draft your appeal and insert your grounds and insert your arguments as to why your child should have been awarded a place in your chosen school, and a guide for completing that template. So, you know, hopefully it's foolproof. You've got the knowledge, you know your circumstances, you know your school and the policies that you're challenging, and you've got the document to complete. So,
and has it been launched already? Have you had parents that have used it?
We're just about to launch it.
Wow, okay.
So this hopefully is going to be the first of many courses to fill what I see as a bit of a gap for accessing advice and information for parents. Because a few years ago, in 2014, legal aid was withdrawn from education law, and with that, free advice meant disappeared, you know, and there's still all these parents who can't afford a lawyer, need to be trained to be able to manage school situations themselves. So my aim is to really empower as many parents as possible by educating them around the law that all our children are educated within. The system is stands on law.
Yeah.
And parents don't really realise that. I want to really educate and empower parents to be able to do the best for their children, really, and to sort of understand the legal system that the education system sits within, you know, whether it's challenging an exclusion or a decision not to give transport to your special needs child to school, or even not to give your special needs child support. I want to deliver a series of courses that will really empower parents to do the best for their children.
I mean, when you think about the fact that how much it costs for a solicitor's letter, £99 to me sounds a bargain, to be honest.
Yeah.
It is.
It's designed to be. You know, I want as many people as possible to download it, take an hour out, watch it, and then get that template and really do your very best. And because you know, your kid goes to school and you know you've done the best to get them into the school you wanted, or you've just done your best, you know, because often my clients, they don't want a guarantee of success. They just want to know they've done everything they could to do right by their child. So that's so important.
Well, you're really inspirational, Caroline. But sadly, we've reached the end of the interview. What would your advice be to families who don't have the strength or will to fight on with their appeal? What would you say to them?
You know, you're not alone. There's a third of parents that don't get their first choice schools, and there's nearly 60,000 appeals every year. And, you know, the panels, they're not scary people, but often, you know, parents often just don't really know how to do it. They do their best, but they don't know what more they could do. So, like, arm yourself, be confident, and just do your best.
Oh, thank you so much. That was Caroline Osborne from Eden Essential Training LLP with some really amazing advice. Thank you so much. What a great resource to have available for families wanting to appeal their education decisions. Stay with us as after our ad break, Jackie speaks to Joanne Mallon, author of a new book, How to Find Joy in 5 Minutes a Day.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
This is an urgent appeal from the Disasters Emergency Committee. Hundreds of thousands of people have fled their homes to escape conflict in Ukraine, leaving jobs, belongings and loved ones behind. They need shelter, food and water. You can help. To donate online, search DEC or text RADIO to 70150 to give £10. Thank you.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday to Saturday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays to meet your immediate medical needs? Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us.
Billy Tong is your Cobham-based biltong and dry vores company. You'll love our fabulous biltong with 16 flavours like wet and fatty, Mrs. Ball's chilli chutney and amazing dry vores. We also sell amazing boerewors. And why don't you try our party catering? Billy Tong is part of the Surrey Hills Initiative and we sell online and at farmers markets like Ripley, Cobham, Horsley and Cranley, to name but a few. Visit our website, billytong.com, or call Mark on 07789 755 504. Billy Tong, it's time to give your taste buds the taste of home.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back, and now Jackie's interview with Joanne Mallon.
I'm pleased to welcome to the show Joanne Mallon, author of new book, How to Find Joy in 5 Minutes a Day. Hello there, Joanne, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jackie. How lovely to talk with you again.
And welcome to the Just Women show. So before we find out all about your new exciting book, it'd be really interesting to find out a bit about your background.
Well, as you can probably tell from the accent, I'm originally from Northern Ireland. I'm from Belfast, although I live in Brighton now. I was originally a TV producer for about 10 years or so before I trained as a coach. And I worked on programmes that you might have seen, like GMTV and This Morning, stuff like that. But I think I really wanted to do something that had a deeper impact on people and help people change their lives in a really meaningful way, that in a way that when you're making live TV, it just doesn't really feel like you're doing that. So eventually I trained as a coach in life coaching, and then I also do a lot of career coaching. So I've been coaching now. I find myself bizarrely one of the most experienced coaches in the UK, simply because I've been doing it for longer than most people. You stick around and you become the experienced person. So yeah, so I'm life and career coach now, and then I've also been writing these books, and I've also got a podcast.
Right, and so it must have been quite a difficult transition from TV work into becoming a coach.
I mean, a lot of the people that I coach now are from the world of TV and media generally, so that there is a transition there. It wasn't difficult because before I got into TV, I trained as a journalist in broadcast journalism, and all of that is about listening to people and listening to people's stories and helping them to tell their stories and helping them to kind of make sense of their world. So I do think that there was a connection within that that made sense to me as I went along. Funnily enough, the next book that's coming out later in the year is called How to Listen. So I've sort of built on all this experience of listening to people over the years to hopefully help them become better listeners themselves.
So anyway, let's talk about your latest book, which is How to Find Joy in 5 Minutes a Day. So what was the thinking behind the book? Because, I mean, you've done quite a few now, haven't you? This is your sixth, I think.
Yes.
And it's a lovely format because it's a small handbag size book that you can pop in your bag. It's really great. So where did the idea come from?
So I had originally written a book that was called How to Change Your Life in 5 Minutes a Day. So that came out last year. And people seem to really love this concept of making quick and easy changes. So that book did quite well. And then the publishers asked me, would I do a book about finding joy in 5 minutes a day? And of course, I was delighted, because when I was writing it over the last year or so, it's been such a tough, gloomy, miserable time that to be able to put your attention onto joy has been a really lovely thing. And what I find now that the book has come out, what a lot of people are telling me is that they're using it almost like a lucky dip. So they'll just open it at random every day and find a thing within there, a tip to take with them for the rest of the day. There's about there's 66 tips within there, and they're all designed to be quite easy things that you can do. Like one of my favorites, for a positive way to start your day, is very simply to make your bed.
Yes, because I saw that.
Well, isn't it interesting, Jackie, that psychologists have bothered to research what it means when you make your bed? But the thinking behind it is that you're setting yourself up in a sort of success mindset for the day. You're telling your subconscious mind that you can do this one very small task of making your bed. And then if you can do that, obviously from there, you go into the rest of your day, and who knows what you can achieve with the rest of your day.
Absolutely. And then you've got a section on minimizing morning stress and writing down your dreams, and also saying 3 thank yous a day.
Honestly, Jackie, saying thank you, a gratitude practice, I think is the most powerful thing that anybody can do if they want to feel more positive and have a more positive outlook. Because as well as doing the books, I've been doing workshops. And so I've been talking to lots of people about this. And I always ask them at the end of the workshop, what works for you? What helps you to feel more positive? And I found that again and again and again, the word gratitude is coming back, and just that is what people are telling me is working for them. So actually, after writing the book, I've doubled up on my gratitude practice. So I do the 3 thank yous that I talk about in the book in the morning when I'm in the shower. That's how I remember to do it. I'm in the shower. I think about, what am I grateful for that's coming up today. And I have to say that talking to you featured this morning, I was thinking, I'm really looking forward to this.
I like talking to Jack.
It's really fun. And then at the end of the day, when my head hits the pillow, I think about what are my three things that I'm grateful for that happened today. Because if you want to start a new habit in your life, easy way to do it is to attach it onto something that you already do. So that's why my gratitude practice is attached onto the fact that I was already having a shower in the morning, and I know I'm always going to be getting into bed and putting my head on the pillow at night. But it is really, it's so powerful, gratitude, because it focuses your attention on the things that are working in your life, the good stuff, the stuff that you are happy and joyful about. And it's not that the bad stuff is necessarily going to go away, but it just feels a bit easier to cope with because you realize that actually, yes, there are good things that are happening in your life. I mean, for me as a parent, if I have a day when I know my children are happy and healthy, wherever they're away at university, but wherever they are, you know, that's enough for me. That is a thing that I'm very, very grateful for. And if I didn't stop and mark that, I might just forget.
Absolutely, yes. And also very interesting section in the book is marking the transition from work to home life, which is very important these days because so many people are now working from home. So, and it's very difficult for some people to set the boundaries.
It really is. And of course, then you end up having burnout, because if you don't have any boundaries, then, you know, you're always going to have people asking different things of you. I mean, I know it's difficult when you're working from home. Not everybody has a separate space that they can work out of, that they can close the door on at the end of the day. If you do have that, that's brilliant. But I think doing some kind of a ritual to mark this is the end of my day, maybe going out for a walk outside, even if it's just around the block. I know most of us are enjoying not having to commute, but even just 5 minutes to get your head showered, as we say in Ireland, and just give yourself a break from whatever stresses you've had to deal with during the day. Some people like to maybe light a candle, or I started actually during the lockdown, I started watching The Chase every day at 5 p.m. when I'd run out of steam at about 5 p.m. if I could finish then. I can't always, because sometimes I coach people in the US and you have to speak to them later in the day. But if I could, I'd stop at 5 and I'd think, well, I'm watching The Chase. It's a quiz program. They're asking questions. That's probably doing my brain some good as well. So it's whatever works for you to draw a line under at the end of your working day, I think is really helpful to just make sure that you're refreshed enough throughout your evening and you can enjoy your evening and be ready for the next day when it comes.
Yes, that's excellent advice. And also on another page, you say write a list of 5 things that bring you joy in life. So I wonder, what are yours?
Oh, wow. Now, that's an interesting one. Yeah, I call this taking a joy audit because I think it's easy to forget just the fun things that we enjoy and not to make time for them. So I encourage people to make this joy audit and then really plan in their diary, when are you next going to do the thing that brings you joy? Because I think a lot of us know in theory what it is, but we don't necessarily make time for it. So for me right now, well, I recently started a hula fit class. You know hula hooping?
Oh, yes. Wonderful.
Brilliant. It's so fun. It is so, so fun. I'm not very good at it. But and in fact, the first week I went, I had a big line of bruises all across my stomach and all down the sides of my legs where I kept dropping the hoop. So I've got to the point where I can do it. So, yeah, so this hula hooping brings me joy. Every time I see my children's happy faces on usually Instagram, my daughter's big on Instagram stories, so I can see, even though she's far away, that she's happy. That brings me joy. I love going to the cinema. I went to the cinema last night. It was brilliant. Even though the film wasn't great, I had some good pick and mix. That was fun. What else? Exercise. I'm really into exercise. I like lifting weight because I'm over 50. So I'm at the stage in life where bone density and muscle tone, all that stuff's going. So I like lifting weights. And what else? Just being outside in the sunshine. as it is today. I think it's that's some free joy that nature gives us, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't beat that. Yes. So you mentioned earlier your podcast. So tell us a bit about that.
So the podcast kind of grew out of the books and the workshops that I was doing. The podcast is called 5 Minutes to Change Your Life. And I guess the USP is that it's only 5 minutes long. So I just, you'd say to people on it, give me 5 minutes of your time and I'll hopefully help you change your life. So I do tackle some quite big topics on there. You know, I've got one on how to become more confident. I've got one on how to deal with stress and how to increase your self-esteem. And it's almost, when I'm preparing for it, it's like writing a short story. You know, you have to really, really edit and just give the main important points. But I try in each podcast to give people either something to think about, maybe something to do, possibly something to write down, but something that will help them change their lives for the better in 5 minutes. And I'm glad to say people have really responded well to it. And I'm getting listeners from all around the world, which is brilliant.
Oh, how fantastic. And how often do you do it?
At the moment, twice a week. It started off three times a week because I figure it's only 5 minutes. You're going to listen to more than one, aren't you?
Sure.
So it's twice a week at the moment.
Oh, well, fantastic. Congratulations on that. So really, I need to ask you what your time management skills are, because you seem to be doing such a lot. And also, how do you manage to write your books? Is there a certain writing regime that you have?
Well, I mean, in terms of time management, OK, I've got a very, very old school approach in that I have a paper Filofax on my desk.
Oh, really?
And I bet there's people listening to this thinking, what even is a Filofax? It was something we had back in the day. So I have a paper Filofax and I write down every commitment that I make. And, you know, I don't differentiate between a personal commitment and a professional commitment. It's not like one takes precedence over the other, because they're all important in terms of the balance of your life. I will say I'm careful about what I agree to. I don't just jump into saying yes to everything. I think that's quite important, you know, managing what's coming in so that you are not just finding your time going on, you know, lots of other people's demands, that you are focused on doing what you need to do. In terms of writing the books, because they are gift books, so they're quite, the design process is I think just as important as the word process. The publisher gives me a structure and I work to that structure. So it'll tell me things like, we need a quote here, because there's lots of motivational quotes within it. We need a short tip here. We need a longer tip here across two pages. So it's that sort of thing. I'm given a certain structure and I fill that within it. And I always start with the quotes because they're kind of the easiest thing to find. And that it then puts me in a kind of more upbeat place to work from. I'm just going to open it at random here, Jackie, and give you a quote to take with you.
Yes.
Oh, here's a nice quote from Marie Kondo on page 63. She says, a joy-filled home is like your own personal art museum.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
How lovely. Yes, thank you, Marie Kondo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And then also I've picked up this one from Eleanor Roosevelt. With the new day comes new strength and new thoughts.
That's lovely, isn't it?
Yes.
She's such a font of wisdom.
Absolutely. Yes. And then, of course, you also do a blog.
I do kind of a little bit less nowadays. I do find that I'm having to kind of work things in together a little bit. So I'm on the blog. I'm sometimes talking about the podcast. So it all kind of works together. But the blog is called Opposable Thumbs, and it's really healthy lifestyle, looking at healthy lifestyle and how do I manage to live a healthy lifestyle. So sometimes I'll be talking about nutrition or well-being or exercise and just all kinds of fun, interesting stuff like that.
Well, that sounds really good. Let's take a look. I saw the one actually about the walking, which I thought was really good. So if people want to buy a copy of your book, obviously they can get it from Amazon and all good booksellers.
Yes, I mean, wherever you choose to buy books, really. I would encourage people to go for the hardback copy, just because, well, you've got a copy of it, so you know it is a gift book. It's got lovely golden bits on the outside. I think it's quite nicely put together. But yes, it should be available anywhere you buy books, and please support your local bookshop.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Would you like to give us your website details?
Yes, if anybody wants to find out more about me or my coaching or the books or the podcast, just go and have a look at my website, which is under my name, joannemallon.com. That's JoanneMallon.com.
Thank you very much, Joanne.
Thank you, Jackie.
That was Joanne Mallon, author of new book, How to Find Joy in 5 Minutes a Day.
That sounds like a really great read and something I could definitely use. Please stay with us, because after our ad break, I chatted to Anita Wong, a digital visibility strategist.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
Set on the banks of the River Thames in the village of Thamesditton, Home of Compassion is a Grade 2 listed mansion with all the amenities of a modern home. We offer residential, nursing and dementia care, providing short stays, convalescent care and long-term care for individuals or couples. We have a range of first-class activities and facilities, from the orangery, the relaxing lounges, the cinema or hair salon, to the beautiful gardens where you can relax or entertain friends and family and enjoy stunning views of Hampton Court Palace. Visit the Home of Compassion website to learn more about our award-winning care.
Sound familiar? With more people working at home and less time to worry about our posture, it's unsurprising that back and neck pain, migraines and sciatica are all on the rise. Luckily, there's somewhere that's got your back. West Chiropractic in West Byfleet prides itself on being a practice helping people from Surrey and beyond with enthusiasm, experience and expertise. With plenty of 5-star reviews, it's a place you truly can trust. Book a free discovery visit now to speak with one of their expert chiropractors and find out how to move forward with a program tailored to your situation. Visit them online at westchiropractic.co.uk.
Hello, my name's Sarah Chaplin, and every Thursday night I host a show called Jazz London Live at 10 o'clock until midnight, and each week I play a selection of jazz, funk, fusion and Latin. I feature an interview in the first hour of the show with somebody on the British jazz scene, a gig guide rounding up the gigs in the week to come, and in the second hour of the show there's Album of the Week, in which I play 3 tracks from a brand new album that's just come out, and also a long track in the second hour of the show to help you wind down to bedtime on a Thursday evening. It gets a bit more mellow towards the end of the show. So if you love jazz, you're going to love this show, Jazz London Live on Brooklyn's Radio. If you're not sure whether you like jazz, give it a try. You might find there's some tracks in there that you really love.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women. For our final interview, here I am speaking to Anita Wong. Welcome, Anita. Thanks very much for coming on our show. Before we chat about your current work, can you tell the listeners a little bit about your career background, what you've done before?
Yeah, certainly, Ivana. Thank you for having me. So my career background started as a teenager wanting to go into nursing, actually. So I did my nursing training straight out of college, and I was the last intake from my college of the traditional registered general nursing training. So we did like 8 weeks in college and then 8 weeks on the ward. So it was a real sort of like almost like an apprenticeship view, but actually I think it was really worthwhile. And then I worked up my way up the ladder in nursing and did intensive care nursing, did the course, went up the ladder, and then met my husband at work. He's a doctor, I'm a nurse, so typical doctor-nurse romance. Ended up getting married, having kids, so I stopped work. And then I was really interested in doing something that I could do from home. So that's when I became interested in selling sort of skate shoes. We discovered them, the ones that people probably know now as Heelys, with a little wheel in the heel. So my husband's from Malaysia, so we were out there one summer and there was loads of kids whizzing around on them, and so I wonder if we've got those in the UK. Anyway, I asked a girlfriend if she wanted to come in with me, and she was like, yeah, okay, let's have a go. So we started something up, and she did all the sort of like accounting side of things, and I did all of the digital marketing, designing the website, doing all the posts and stuff like that. So that's where I sort of fell in love with what I'm doing now. And then we sort of closed that down after a few years because we just sort of like fell out of love of just doing it online sort of thing. And then I just went back to college and did a certificate in web design, did my marketing course. And then it's just really built up from there to where I am at the moment.
So that's what a complete career change from nursing to doing what you're doing now. But that just shows you actually that how people's values change, don't they? What's important in a job in one area of your life isn't necessarily what's important in a job when you get older, is it? So that's quite...
No, I always wanted to have a career where I was around when the kids came back from school. So I knew as they grew up that nursing was hard to go back to, because especially the area that I nursed in, it was 12-hour shifts. So it was really hard to have somebody at home. And I did give it a go for a little while and it just wasn't working out. So I was like, actually, you know what, I'm just going to step back and spend time being mummy and then work out something that I can do from home. So I like the fact that I can choose my hours, take days off when I want. I'm also really into sport. I'm a BMX racer, so I do spend a bit of my time in the week on the track, not even like switching my computer on. So it's important to be able to sort of like choose my hours in a way.
Yeah, I think flexibility for mums is such a key thing, isn't it? So many mums want a job that gives them that, which I totally understand.
Yeah.
So now you're a digital visibility strategist. So tell us, what does that entail?
Yeah. So what it does is I help other business owners, mainly women actually, because maybe it's just I just connect with them a bit easier, but I do have men in my network as well. But I just help them to understand how to use the tools that we need to use to become visible. So primarily that's Facebook, Instagram and YouTube. And it's more about just reducing that overwhelm and teaching them step by step how they can actually get visible using these tools and how they can step into the shoes of their audience and then bring that out in the way that they want to.
So in relation to that, because this is something I definitely am guilty of, if you like, in not using it, is there an issue of feeling exposed for women when they do all these things? It's almost like you put yourself out there, and as soon as someone makes a negative comment, it's you kind of feel, oh no, I wish I hadn't done that now. Do you know what I mean? It's a risk.
Yeah, I suppose it's that, well, you can use social media in different ways. So I think a lot of, you have to change your mindset a little bit and start off having it set up properly. So start off with a business account, start off with a business page, you know, and really just post the things that you want to share on those platforms rather than your personal Facebook, for example. And I think that way, your friends and family don't necessarily see those updates, and then you can grow in confidence when you sort of start to get more into working with the platform. When it comes to negative comments and things like that, there's ways now, they've really improved the way that you can block people who are, you know, starting to do those sorts of things. And also, I believe that in mindset wise, if somebody says something negative about you, it's probably because they're jealous of what you're doing and that they just like, you know, they're not really in line or in tune with what you're offering. So they're just not sure how to react to it.
Yeah. So obviously having done this and being well aware of what's going on in terms of digital media, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that women face in relation to that? Is it having the confidence in relation to sort of digital media? Is it having the confidence to go for it and to put yourself out there? What is it, do you feel?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue, I think, is not knowing how to use it in a way that will help them to just spread their joy. Because most of the women that I come across, they're on their second careers. They've been in corporate, or they've given up everything that they were doing to just follow that passion that's burning inside of them. And then they suddenly hit this brick wall, which is digital marketing. It's like, oh, I don't know how to do it. And I think once you understand the sort of fundamentals of how each tool works, then you can start to really start, you know, sharing your passion. But I think what you've got to remember overall is just be yourself. You know, don't try to be somebody else. Don't look at that influencer and go, oh, they've got like 100,000 followers, so I've got to do exactly what they do. Start off just being you, because you'll attract your crowd by being you.
I guess if you don't embrace social media, no one's going to actually know about you, are they? So you could be the best thing since sliced bread, but no one's going to know that you're the best thing since sliced bread.
No, and it's funny you say that. I had a conversation with someone today, and like a lot of people start off with their careers on a second career by referrals, you know, like their friends will refer someone to them, or people will they've worked with will say, oh, you need to go and see so-and-so because they're really good at what they do. And then suddenly they get to the point where that's sort of been like that's dried up and they need to expand. And that's when that audience growth is so important. So I think, you know, whilst you get those referrals from your friends and family, you do need to start putting some of the background work in, which is like your audience growth. And that comes down to sort of like moving them from social into, say, like an email marketing tool where you can then reach them without having to expose yourself on social if you're not comfortable about that, because you can then reach them in your inbox and that's much more personal.
Sure. So take us through some of the services you provide, Anita.
Well, I help people to really sort of like connect with their audience so that they can actually then start to nurture and sell to them. And that process is done in the back end at first. So it's like looking at the audience themselves, like who is it that you want to serve? What is it that you actually want to sell? And, you know, those sorts of things first. And then once you have that idea of who you're wanting to attract and who you want to sell to, it's looking at those clients' characteristics. It's almost like you step inside their shoes and then you work out all those, like, so what do you think they might need? And then once you've worked that out, you then work out that customer journey that you want them to go on. And that usually includes being visible on Facebook, being visible on Instagram, perhaps opening a YouTube channel, and then all of the sort of things that comes with, like, how do you do an Instagram reel? How do you put a post up? You know, all those sorts of things. How do you write content?
You touched on something there. Do you think that sometimes the issue is that people try and give their audience what they think they need rather than what they actually need? In other words, they're maybe plugging a gap that doesn't exist in their eyes.
Yeah. And it's really important that you give your audience what they want. And I think the thing is that a lot of people, they see what they want to give and then they just keep pushing it out rather than actually just listening to their audience. And, you know, obviously it's very difficult to start that process up if you don't have an idea of what you want to sell or who your audience is, which is why it's really good to start at the back end and look at the framework. And then I would say the most important thing about growing your business online is to actually grow your audience first. So if you've got anything to sell later, that comes because your audience is telling you what they want to buy.
And they trust you.
Comments. Yeah, they trust you, they get to know you, and you can share, you know, behind the scenes. You talk to them when you're on a walk with the dogs, or you share with them something that you've celebrated. You share with them your date, your down days as well. You know, they become part of your everyday life on social, but only as much as you want them to. So you set the boundaries so that you are, you know, you're happy with what you want them to know and what they want to know from you.
Yeah, because I guess another issue is sometimes people try to be all things to all people. So they say, I can do this, I can do that, I can do that. And they probably can, but it's probably best to niche down first. And then once people are your customers, then you can share with them, well, I actually do this and I do that and I do that. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think you need to have one way in. And I think we all struggle with that because some of us are very good at everything. And it's like, how do I actually get them in? And sometimes it takes a while. Like for me at the moment, well, most of the time, my focus is actually helping people understand how to use Facebook and Instagram and video. So the video marketing around that. But people ask me about YouTube because I've grown my YouTube channel to nearly 5,000 subscribers and I'm just short of 1 million views. So how did you do that? And I'm like, OK, well, I had a group of people that were asking me last year, can you show me how to do it? So that's when I created a course to show them how to do it. This year, everyone's focus is on Facebook and Instagram because there's so many changes going on. They can't keep up with this is changing, that's changing. So I personally think that by the time the end of summer comes, I'll have a course ready to sell because people will be interested in that. But it's only what they have been asking me for, in a way, that I start to create it.
So, I mean, I'm just getting my head around Instagram, Twitter and those kind of things. And then along comes TikTok.
Yeah, I know there's a battle with TikTok and Instagram at the moment because obviously TikTok started with very short form video. So it's like, you know, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, and then it went to 1 minute, then it went to 3 minutes, and now they've introduced 10 minutes. So people on TikTok are rebelling a little bit. Why would you want to go on TikTok for 10 minutes? You know, it's supposed to be a quick flick, watch this sort of thing. But they really grew their audience through entertainment videos. But now, because, of course, they've got lots of creators on there, they want to make money. So they've introduced 10 minutes so that, number one, they can introduce ads. So therefore, they keep people on longer. But then Instagram now has really started to support its creators because it wants the creators to feel like they're loved. So they're giving them lots of money in the form of bonuses. So they've introduced the bonus program where creators get paid, but they've also introduced this really great learning resource for other creators, which I've actually been introducing to my network, because actually it's helping all of us. And there's lots of little videos in there about how to pick up the trending sounds, what to do about your voice, how do you connect with your audience. So I think the battle is going to continue between these quite big dynamic platforms. And I heard today, I read somewhere today, that TikTok's introducing stories. Wow. So again, it's almost like this copycat who can do this before that. And it's so overwhelming for everybody because you get your head around one part.
Yeah,
you do. Like, you get your head around one part. So, okay, so let's do Reels. And then suddenly, oh, but you need to be on TikTok because it's the next big thing. And then Reels go, no, you need to come back here because we're doing this. And it's really overwhelming for a lot of people, so much so that they end up doing nothing because it's like, oh, I'm just not going to go there, you know. So I would recommend just starting with one or two. So say, like, for example, Facebook, Meta, as they are now known, own Facebook and Instagram. So if you have a presence on one, you can actually automatically have a presence on the other. So you're pretty much reaching two different types of audiences. And then you look at which audience is your audience, because you really should be on a platform where your audience is, not where you think you should be. And that goes back down to understanding who it is that you want to serve, who you want to sell to, who you want as your audience.
So you touched on YouTube a while ago, or a few minutes ago, Anita. What is the 3-day YouTube challenge?
Yeah, so it's basically introducing how powerful YouTube is for business owners, because I think it's overlooked quite a lot by small business owners, because I think it looks really scary. You know, you go onto YouTube all the time and it's like, oh, I can look at all that, you know, that creator's got like 100,000 subscribers. How am I going to, you know, how am I ever going to get found on here? And I started posting videos onto YouTube, and what happened was that it was quite quiet, but I was doing it because it was like, okay, I do a lot of practical videos. So it was like, well, I've just discovered that on Facebook you can do this, so why don't I just record a video and share it with everybody else? And that's how my journey began. And I want to just try to sort of like show people in that 3-day challenge that YouTube's not this big giant that is you know, it's not touchable by the normal sort of business owner, and that we all started with our first video. My first video is like, the lighting is awful. I just come in because I just discovered this new update, and it was like, I've got to share this with you. And it was like 4 minutes long, and it's had nearly 200,000 views. But the lighting is like, the light off my light in the kitchen is reflecting, and I'm looking down, and you know, and it's just like, but it's where you start. And that video's like still driving traffic to my channel. And YouTube is so good because you can share it to other channels. So it's not like in like an enclosed box like Facebook and Instagram is, because Facebook and Instagram, obviously they're a social app, but they have a search within their own little vacuum in a way, whereas YouTube is owned by Google. So if you put a video on YouTube and somebody types into Google, how do I do a Facebook story, your video is going to come up above all of the ads on Google as well. So that's how powerful it is as a search engine for small business owners. So that's why I'm doing a 3-day challenge, to just to give them a taster of like identifying what your channel could be, how you like create a video, and then the steps that I take when I create a video. So that's what I'm sharing.
So basically what you're saying, Anita, is there's hope for us all. That's basically what you're telling me. Well, sadly, Anita, honestly, I could talk to you all day. I find all this information really useful. But we've reached the end of the interview. If listeners would like to find out more, how can they do that? What's your email and website address?
Yeah, so my website address is actually my name. So it's anitawong.co.uk. And my email is anita@anitawong.co.uk. And have a little look on YouTube and just type in Anita Wong and I should pop up. And then, you know, there's all my contact details on there.
Thank you so much. That was Anita Wong from anitawong.co.uk with some really useful advice. Thank you. I really agreed with Anita when she talked about giving your audience what they need, not what you think they need. So we'd like to thank all our guests today on Just Women. That's Caroline Osborne of Eden Essential Training LLP, Joanne Mallon, author of new book How to Find Joy in 5 Minutes a Day, and Anita Wong of anitawong.co.uk. And a special thanks to my other presenter, Jackie Mitchell. A reminder as always that we're keen to hear about local women with interesting lives. So if you know someone you think would be ideal for our show, or you'd like to come on, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we'll get in touch with them and hopefully get them or you on a future show. Details of past and future guests can be found on our website, that's brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen, and you can find us on Facebook too at /justwomen.br and Twitter at Brooklands Radio. So thank you for listening and join us again next week for Just Women, 1 o'clock on Tuesday, repeated 8 o'clock on Thursday. Until then, it's goodbye from the Just Women team.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.